that I have to tell you?
Certainly. Dorothy Vickers Shelley interviewing Taylor Lee Thomas, Monday, July 16th, Rural Route 2, Urbana. Mr. Thomas, would you please tell me what brought you to Champaign, Urbana?
First, maybe I should say that this is 1979.
What did I say?
You said July 16th, but you didn't say the year.
Oh, thank you. Okay, 1979. Thank you. For posterity, we need that. Go ahead.
As far as coming to Champaign-Urbana, well, I came here October the 5th, 1911, at Burnham Hospital, since I was born in Champaign. Born and reared here. However, that was made possible by my parents having moved here. In fact, my grandparents, my maternal grandparents, moving here from Tinsall Parish, Louisiana. That was my mother and her brothers and sisters and her parents. And my father moved here from Paris, Illinois, where his mother lived, and she had moved to Paris from Kentucky many years before. Somehow my mother and father got acquainted and married, and the outcome was Taylor Thomas. And after Taylor Thomas arrived on the scene, they decided that there would be no more Thomases. I don't know whether I was kicking my heels too high at that time, or I just wasn't handsome enough. But nevertheless, my grandparents, I remember something about them as a result of listening to my mother and father talk from time to time. I did see my maternal grandfather and my paternal grandmother. The other grandparents had died before I was born. And some of the things that I remember about them, my grandfather was a park policeman in Champaign, Westside Park, which is located on the corner of Church Street and State, bounded by University Avenue, I believe, and Elm on the other side. And at that time, that was a pretty good-sized park for community of Champaign.
And it's a stage, but...
Here my grandfather, who had moved here with his family, found it necessary to try to build a little home on a lot that they had bought at that time for $25 next to the railroad track. Of course, they could have bought a lot in what we know now is the campus area, University of Illinois, for about $50.
Year are we talking about?
We're speaking now about 1890 or 92, something like this.
Okay.
But he proceeded to accumulate two or three little pieces of property, of which he lived in one, and eventually my mother and father bought one house from him, and he rented another. And at the same time, he had a small grocery store, which he was running at the time that he died in 1919, of which you can see I was old enough to enjoy his company and remember him quite well.
Where was this store?
The store was on Champaign Street, about 701 North Champaign, which is also next to the railroad tracks. For some reason, we had a love for railroad tracks. But it was a very small grocery store, but it continued to, after his death in 1919, my mother continued to run the grocery store until about 1930, I believe, something like this. I remember all during the time that I was in grade school and high school. She operated the store, but my mother eventually became ill, and she had to stop working in the grocery store. But previously, she had done a number of things. She had been a, you might say, a beautician. They didn't call them beauticians at that time. They called them hairdressers. And she did the work in her own kitchen at home. My father, who eventually became a cook, at one time was a barber, and it was always amusing to listen to my mother say that she refused to marry my father because when he was a barber he wasn't making but $7 a week, and she said that wasn't enough. So my father got a job working in the kitchen. He wasn't a cook at first, he was just a helper, making $10 a week, and so they got married.
Where did he work in Champaign as a barber?
He worked in Clinton as a barber, Clinton, Illinois. He came here from Paris and went to Clinton and barbered in Clinton, and then from Clinton he came to Champaign and barbered on Main Street in Urbana. I did not recall the name of the barber shop, but it was in the block between Race and Broadway on Main Street, on the north side of the street. And on the south side of the street, I think, where the Busey Bank is located now, there was a hotel. And they offered him a job working in the kitchen for his food and also lodging and $10 a week. And that was more than he was making as a barber, because they were getting, I think, 15 cents for a haircut and a dime for a shave at that time. And so he jumped at the job because here he had his meals and his lodging and also $10 a week, you might say.
What year then are we talking about?
We're speaking now about 1900, in that general area.
Okay.
It might have been 1899. It must have been around 19. Might have been 1901, because I think Dad came to Champaign-Urbana. He had been in Clinton before, and he came to Champaign-Urbana around 1900, and Mother and Dad, I think, were married about 1902. It's something in this general area. So it was around the turn of the century, really. And because, see, I was born in 1911, married, yes, about 9 years, I think. When I was born, because my mother was really surprised, because a neighbor who lived across the street had a child in February of 1911, and my mother named the girl. Her name was Vivian, and when my mother went to was so elated, you might say, over this friend having a child, but she didn't realize at the same time that in October she would be having a child. So I was on the way, but she didn't know it at that time.
I wanted to ask you, when your dad worked at this hotel, which you say is on the corner where Busey Bank
is, I think
did
it was
you ever go with him?
No, this was before I was born.
Oh, I see. He worked there before.
Yeah, he was. In fact, you see, when I was born, my father was cooking then. He was a big shot cook for that time. So he started working first part of the century.
At the same hotel?
Yeah, no. When I was born, he was working in Champaign then at what was known as Beardsley Hotel, and eventually became known as Tilden Hall Hotel, which eventually was torn down, and it was located on the corner of Hill and Neal Street. He was working there when I was very young, and then when I was in junior high age, he was working on the campus at the Zeta Beta Tau fraternity, which is located on South 4th Street. And I recall that so vividly because quite often I would go over to the fraternity house. It was a Jewish fraternity, and when the football games were football season, quite often they would just buy a block of tickets or seats for the game, but maybe never go to the game. And so maybe about an hour before the game, Dad would call up and say, "I got some tickets to the football game. You want to go?" And Mother and I would get busy and go over to the house, pick up the tickets, and go on to the football game. In fact, I don't recall where I got the tickets, whether we bought these or whether those were given to us, but I have the stubs of the very first football game that was played in the stadium. We saw the University of Illinois play University of Chicago. It was in the
what
Big Ten at that
was
time.
This?
This was about 1923, I believe, was the first game, and then the first homecoming game was in 1924, and I have the stub for that. That was when Red Grange ran wild against the University of Michigan. So that was, those were pleasant days, I might say.
Oh, 1 minute, I'd like to ask.
Yes.
You say you and your mother went to the stadium. Did black people have a particular place to sit?
No, never. No. To my recollection, as far as anything to do with education was concerned, say the public schools or football games or something like that, black people were not segregated in any way. Now, I do know that as far as theaters are concerned, yes, they were segregated in theaters. As far as, say, eating establishments were concerned, as far as housing was concerned, you say, in fact, on the campus of the University of Illinois, the black students did not have a place to eat or to sleep.
What year
until
are we talking
after
about?
What the Union Building was built, which was around 1942. See, when the Union Building was built in 42, then students could eat in the Union Building, and other places began to open up, and places on the campus where students to stay began to open up.
This
university
1942.
I would say yes. I'd say I would say after 1942. Before that time, the students found it very difficult to find places. In fact, I think you will hear students who were here in the 50s speak about the difficulty of things, but they do not realize that in the 50s there had been many changes made. In fact, you'll hear Jesse Jackson, who was here in school in the 50s. He was here for a short while, and then
excuse
he left and
me,
went to Carolina.
Jesse Jackson of Push in Chicago?
Yes, this is the Jesse Jackson of Push in Chicago, who will speak about from time to time in some of his lectures about the conditions on the campus. And granted, sometimes all of us get carried away a little bit and we exaggerate a little bit, or else we speak of one or two incidents that we experience personally and then we make a generalization. Because by the 50s, things had improved a great deal, but not to the point where everyone is happy by any means. It was in 51 or 52, I always forget which year, Barbara Bain, who was on some TV program.
Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible. She was Miss Illinois in 51 or 52, and there was a black young lady that was Miss Illinois in the opposite year. Either it was 51 or 52. I think it was 52. It was the first black queen in the Big Ten. And
homecoming queen?
Homecoming queen in the Big Ten. In fact, perhaps in the country. But I know it was the first black queen. And since that time, Illinois has had two or three other queens.
I am glad, very glad that you remembered that, because we had thought, I mean, many of us,
mm-hmm.
that Melody Benson, who was queen, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, had been the first black.
No, she was about the third. There were at least two before her. I know the one in 52. Then there was another, I think, in the latter part of the 50s. I'm not sure. And then this Melody Queen that you're speaking about. But Illinois has had at least three queens. And the first one was about 52. And I forget her name,
we could check the records for
Oh,
that.
Yes, that could easily be checked. And, oh, interesting, I think it was that very same year, on Dad's Day, the lucky father was a black man also. You see, on Father's Day, that's just a hat draw sort of thing. Girls put in the name of their father, and they write a paragraph about them, and then they draw out the name or something like this, or they take the letter and judge which father, which girl wrote the best paragraph about her father, or else whoever pulls the lucky ticket out. But however it was, there was a black father that was the king for a day on Father's Day, and that was the first time that had happened also. So I don't know, my life I guess has been full of knowing a lot of firsts that have happened over the years in different places and different times.
You know, at this point, Mr. Thomas, I'd like to ask you to sort of give us a general list, if you could, of things, of organizations, community agencies, activities committees, things like that you have been a part of over the years. I know that we'll get into them somewhat throughout this tape, but I thought if we had the listing of them at this point.
It perhaps is going to be difficult for me to remember them unless I bring, in the course of conversations, you say, maybe some of them will come to mind, but just right off the top of my head, I think in terms, I think first in terms of the old community chest, which was a forerunner of the United Way, which I served on, and also at that time there was a council of social agencies. That was in the 40s, sometime in the 40s when I was director of Douglas Recreation Center. Regular after that,
Mr. Thomas, as you're relating this, can you give us years, you know, that you were on this board, and the years, or is that difficult at this time?
It might be kind of difficult. I would say, as far as the community chest was concerned, this was around 1946, 47, in that general period. I served on, Employment on Merit Committee was a group we had here in the latter part of the 40s, about 1948, 49, a group that tried to find employment for members of the minority group, which was more difficult than it is now.
Which group, agency, whatever, did this committee come out of?
Nothing. This is an original committee that started on its own.
Community people?
Community and university. The connection would have been university YMCA had a couple of individuals serving on the committee, a couple of university professors, plus an integrated group of blacks and whites in the community. However, there were more whites working on it than there were blacks. The important thing was to try to find employment for minorities, especially for blacks at that time. We hadn't gotten into the women as minorities at that time or other groups. Blacks seemingly was the largest minority group and the ones that were having the most difficult time trying to find employment in order to raise their standard of living and all the things that go with it. Then out of that, out of the Employment on Merit Committee, grew the Council on Community Integration. In other words, we went to the step of trying to find housing for blacks. It was very difficult. That is something that Mary and I have went through when we got married. I would say we tried to find suitable housing for about 15 years and encountered a great deal of embarrassing, disgusting things that would make you angry. Just a few examples. One time we called a real estate dealer for housing that was in a fringe area. It wasn't really a house that we wanted, but it was one that had apartment downstairs, apartment upstairs. We thought we could rent the one downstairs. We hadn't been married very long. And, live in the one downstairs, rent the one upstairs. And Well, anyway, they told us over the phone. Seemingly, they couldn't recognize my voice as being black necessarily. So they told us over the phone that we'll meet you at the house. So when they met me at the house, when they met my wife and I at the house, we got out of the car and they were there waiting. And then the fellow, when I walked up and asked him about the house, he didn't take us in the house or anything. He just said, oh, well, if you had have told me over the phone who you were, you could have saved both of us a little time and trouble. I was so angry, and to keep myself from, say, hitting the man, I immediately took hold of my wife's hand, and we switched around and got in the car, and I drove off. Another experience, another house, it was not that big a deal, but it was advertised in the paper. We called the man, he met us at the house, and immediately, you could see the expression on their face when they saw that we were black. And he started making excuses about, I said, this is the house for sale? Well, yes, and well, we'd like to see through it. Well, they took us through, and their people were living in the house. And then when I, even though it was not the ideal house that we wanted, but we wanted to get something, so we said, well, we'll get equity in something instead of paying rent. And we told him, said, well, how much is it? He told us it was too much, but we said, we'll take it, just like that. He said, well, then he started hedging. He said, well, you know, our daughter has equity in this house. And I said, well, can we talk with her? Well, she lives in California, and we'll have to contact her, and blah, blah, blah. I said, well, when are you going to contact her? Well, we'll contact her this week. So we waited a week and then called them and asked them. And they said, well, she doesn't want to give up her equity. But yet we noticed that the house was still for sale in the paper 2 or 3 weeks later.
Could you tell me where these two houses were
one
located?
House was one house was located on South 5th Street, between Springfield and White, someplace along that area.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was on, that was in Champaign, and the other was in Urbana, about a block south of University Avenue on, oh gosh, I can't recall. Anyway, it was in the general area of where University of WILL is located. It was a
Goodwin, around the Goodwin area?
Yeah, well, it's about a block east of Goodwin and about a block south of University Avenue. Which is to say, neither area, even though at that time there were very few blacks in the area, if any, it was not what we wanted, but it was something that we thought that we could, you know, put up with. Then, another experience we had was with a real estate dealer in Urbana.
Do you wish to name any of these real estate dealers?
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. The real estate dealer that we dealt with in Champaign, of whom, of course, I naturally have a personal bias, and that was Royce.
And Brinkmeyer.
Yes, that
we
was,
have heard that.
Yeah, I had this with Royce, and then we had an experience with a Brown real estate dealer in Urbana.
I'm not familiar with that name.
Where we had, well, that experience was in the University Downs area. Now, we had had 2 or 3 houses offered by the owners to us in University Downs, but they were just not, they're very small bedrooms, a basement with the, it was just, they were not satisfactory, and we didn't feel that we just wanted to throw money away, because we knew that once we bought, why would be some time, if ever, that we'd ever be able to change. So, but they finally, new lots opened up in the university area, south of Colorado, and east of Vine Street. In that general area, they hadn't built back in that area at the time. University Downs was basically from Vine Street over to Race Street. And so open lots came in, and Brown had these lots for sale. So we went to see him about those, and they had the plot on the board, and we looked at them. Now, normally, a real estate dealer would take you out to show you the lot. They didn't offer to do that. They just pointed it out on the diagram, on the map, and we found where we thought we might want. And then we drove out and looked at the area. In fact, we were thinking in terms, since the lots were kind of small, we were thinking in terms of buying two lots there together. So we said, now this might be what we'd want right now to build on. And so then we went back to Brown Real Estate and told them that we think we'd like this lot here. And they said, all right, you know you have to have some honest money. Well, okay, how
did
much...
Did they say honest money or earnest money?
Well, earnest, I guess you'd say, but okay. Some of us call it honest money.
Right.
They want to keep you honest, see. So they say you have to pay so much. Well, I've forgotten how much it was now, but it wasn't something that we normally carried in a checking account. So this meant that we said, okay, that we would have to go to the bank, draw out money on savings, see, and put it down. This we did. Then went to the bank and took out our money, took it back to the real estate dealer, and put it down. Out the money and turned right around, went back to the real estate dealer, gave him the check. This is about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And they took the check, and the next morning in the mail, we got the check back with a letter saying that, well, they were sorry, but the subdivider wouldn't sell to us. Now, the thing that was so disgusting was that if that were the truth, I mean, if this was really true, why didn't he tell us that when we were there, before we went to the bank to draw our money out? Why didn't he just say, well, they're not going to sell it to you, see? Now, actually, I would assume that maybe if we had been the type of individual that would have gone to court and tried to fight it. But when you don't have that much money and you think in terms of maybe losing, and then your money's shot and you don't have anything either. And so we always had hopes that, well, maybe something will work out someplace else. So we didn't. We took our little money and then put it back in the bank. But, you see, this had messed us up on the interest on the money. See, we'd lost interest, see. Well, anyway, those experiences were not the best. And then finally, after about 12 or 15 years, we saw this little place in the country that was advertised in the newspaper. My wife saw it in the newspaper.
What year are we talking about?
We're talking about now, 1959. And
the other two experiences were around?
The other experiences were, one I think was in the latter part of the 40s. The other two were in the early part of the 50s.
So we're at 1959 when you're at this lot.
And we saw it. Was advertised 2.5 acres and house on it with so many rooms and full basement and so forth. So we decided that we had reached a point. Really, we'd gone all over Champaign. We'd driven all over Champaign. We'd looked at places. We'd tried to get places. We weren't able to get it. We'd gone to real estate dealers, and some of them would show us property the north end of Champaign. And not because of the north end of Champaign, but the property they showed us wasn't property that I would have bought if it had been next to the country club in Champaign. So we talked with the people that lived in the house, and they had built the house about 3 years before. And themselves, the man was a carpenter, and looked like it was fairly decent construction, and they told us what they wanted for it. We said, well, can we get an option on it? We got, I forgot, it was 30 or 40 days, something like that. Anyway, then we proceeded to try to find the loan. You see, that was a problem during those days. first you had a hard time finding somebody that would sell to you. Then if you found someone to sell to, you found a hard time getting someone to let you have the money. And then if you wanted to build, you found a hard time getting a contractor to build for you. Well, we decided then to try to find money. At that time we were banking. My parents had banked for years at Mattis Trevitt Bank, which is now the Bank of Illinois, in Champaign.
Excuse me, would you spell that? Mattis Trevitt?
Mattis, M-A-T-T-I-S, and T-R-E-V-E-T-T, Mattis Trevitt. There's two people, Mattis and Trevitt. In fact, I think it was a Mattis girl that Congressman Springer married, I think. He married into that family, Mattis or Trevitt, I think.
So then the Main Street Mattis in Champaign, is that named after
this
family?
Yes, I think it is, yes. But when my parents had banked there for some time, my parents had also banked at the First National Bank in Champaign. So we went, and we were banking at Mattis Trevitt. And so we went there for a loan. Well, they wouldn't give us a loan. Their excuse was that the house was out in the country. So we proceeded then. We went to the First National Bank, and no luck there. I think since we didn't have luck at the First National, we went to the commercial. We went to each bank in Champaign. Then we also went to some insurance companies, and actually we went to some other agencies that loaned money, but no one would give us a loan. Well, one insurance company, it was the Equitable, I think it's the insurance company, offered to give us a loan, but it was not quite enough as far as we're concerned. We felt we were going to have to rely on it. We felt that we were going to have to take it, which meant that we were going to have to take everything we had in savings, plus what we could get from the Equitable Insurance Company. And we didn't want to do that unless we had to, because then we wouldn't have had anything to fall back on. That was interesting because, you see, we really had enough in savings at that time of our own to put down, which was much more than the average individual put down on a house.
What amount are we talking about?
We're thinking about half of it. About a half of the cost of the property, see.
Okay, and but dollar-wise, what amount about are we talking about? I'm asking for clarity, when we use words like a lot, you know, and not much, you're talking about...
Well, here I'm thinking in terms of comparing what normally I would say if a person had one-tenth of what they were buying, whereas we had five-tenths of what we were buying.
And was this, you think, because you were black?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Then finally, we decided, after we found out that the various agencies and banks and insurance companies, we thought we were going to have to rely on the Equitable Insurance Company. But there was one bank that we hadn't been to in Urbana, and we didn't, because I just felt that, well, I wouldn't get it, that would be the last place I would get it. But I said, well, we've tried every place else, we might as well try them. So it was the Busey Bank in Urbana.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, because you said earlier that was your bank.
Well, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
We went to Busey Bank and asked them about a loan. It was very interesting. They immediately said yes. They didn't even ask us anything about that. Well, they asked us where was it located, and we told them it was out in the country. And I even told them that I'd been turned down because they said it's out in the country. They didn't pay any attention to this whatsoever, seemingly. They just said, well, how much do you need? And we told them the cost of the house. They said, well, we won't have to worry. We wouldn't let you have enough to take care of that. And I said, well, do you want to look at that. I said, well, yeah, I said, we'll come out to look at it. After we look at it, we may let you have more. So this is what happened. I mean, they came out and looked at it, and they let us have more. And so we didn't have to worry about our savings, because they were going to cover it for us. They did, and that's why I bank at Busey. I mean, I moved. We moved our banking account from Mattis Trevitt to Busey, and I guess it's the experiences that you have with different people and different banks or what have you that causes you to lean in that direction. Now, maybe some other individuals haven't had as pleasant experience at Busey as we have.
Okay,
but we
well,
have, and so that's why we bank there, because they're the ones that, on top of giving us a loan, before, after we had been in the house about 5 years, we decided we wanted to put an addition on, a family room and another bedroom, because the house was not the size that it is now, and we hadn't finished paying our loan back, and we went to them, asked them, they said, oh, that's no problem, said, we'll just pay off your loan and give you another loan to put on the addition. So this is what they did. And they gave us another loan, we put on the addition, and I've been very happy with Busey, and I've continued to bank there, and unless a number of changes come up, I will do I'll do otherwise, really.
Okay, so this is 1959.
Yeah, from 1959, yes.
Do you know, do you recall who was president of that bank at that time, or who was chairman of the board?
Yeah, well, at that time, I think Clausen was the president. They were the his wife was a Busey, former Busey, and they had controlling interest in the bank at that time. And eventually, they retired, went to Florida, and sold the controlling interest then to Doug Mills, who is chairman of the board now.
Okay, so now at this point, 1959, mm-hmm. was Busey located right where it is
same
now,
place.
Main and Race?
Yes.
They
located.
Had torn. Okay, they had torn down the hotel where
oh,
your
yes.
father
yeah,
was.
Many, many years
it
before.
It didn't burn up or anything
no.
like that.
No, many, many years before.
Right, I'm going to put it on back so I can see where we left off. Mr. Thomas, will you continue at this point with your listing of organizations you participated in?
Yes, but before I do that, I think that now is a good time for me to ask my wife to come in on this, because we're talking about a period in my life in which she has been a part of it. From 1945 on to the present time, we have been married. I married Mary Grace Jordan, who lived at 1208 Eade Street in Urbana, and we were married June the 20th, I think I'm right, 1945, and she knows about as much about me and as much about this community as I do, and I think that I'd like for her to be in here with us so that she can put her comments in also from time to time.
Oh, that's fine.
And I'm sure she'll help me remember some things that I have forgotten. But as for other organizations, in the early 40s, about 1943-44, I was president of the NAACP in Champaign. And like so many organizations, you could get membership, but found it difficult to get people to come to the meetings other than the executive group, the officers, and one or two others. But we proceeded to try and fight battles. I recall that we had gathered, had a meeting, and it was during a time when the Champaign police were trying to get people to vote for a new bond issue to raise money so they could put about 10 new policemen on the police force. This is what I'm getting ready to say now is ironic or is amusing, considering that we have a black chief of police in Champaign. But this, you must realize, is going back now to the 1940s, early part of the 1940s. But anyway, after they were able to, when they were trying to raise the money, the policemen were all in the north end of Champaign trying to get people to vote. All right, the voting came up, they got their money so that they could add two new policemen. So in our little group of NAACP, we decided that we should have some black policemen on the police force. We had only one, Mr. Al Rivers, who had been on the force since early part of 1930s, which was at that time more of a political appointment because I think a man by the name of Flynn was mayor of Urbana at that time. And
What year?
This was about 1935, approximately. Now, I could be off 1 or 2 years here. Mm-hmm. But anyway, regardless of how, Al Rivers was a policeman and was the only black policeman on the police force. And we felt that there should be more. So in our meeting, the suggestion was made that we go down to the city council and make it known to them that they were out in the north end trying to get votes to raise money, to add police. We should have some more policemen. And this was understood in our small meeting of those who attended. And I agreed to go to the council meeting. At that time we had a commissioner form of government and a mayor, and the commissioners were elected at large. So there were some members who were supposed to meet me there, but when I got to the council meeting the next morning, there was no one there except Taylor Thomas, myself.
When you say members, you mean members
of the NAACP.
Okay.
And
initials stand for what, Mr. Thomas?
National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Thank you.
But I presented my little bit to the council. At that time, the council didn't meet in the huge room that it meets in now because there were not that many people who attended meetings. It was a very small room, just large enough really for the commissioners and the mayor, really, and maybe 4 or 5 chairs around the wall. And so I presented, I said that I feel that we should have more black policemen on the police force. Now that you have money to add 10, we feel that some should be black. At least 2 should be black. Well, thank you, Mr. Thomas. We are glad for your presentation, blah, blah, blah. The usual line, thinking that they can pass you off and then that will be all there is to it. So after a while, 2 police were put on. Of course, this all comes on the paper, but there were white. Waited a while, 2 more were put on, white. So Taylor goes back again to the city council and again puts in his spiel, and they say, well, we have 6 more to put on, blah, 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 we're looking at it, we're thinking about it, we're taking this into consideration, everything you said, so forth and so on. Go back, wait again, 2 more were put on, no black, 2 more were put on, no black. They put on 8, there are only 2 more places to be filled. This time, I go back to the city council, and we had a little knockdown drag out, more or less, you might say. First, the mayor asked me, why was I interested?
Who was the mayor again?
The mayor, Babb.
Babb?
Yeah, Babb. Wanted to know, why was I interested? Did I want the job? No, I didn't want the job as a policeman. And the reason I'm interested is that in order for black people, at that time the term was not black, it was Negroes, mm-hmm. to raise their standard of living, they need jobs to improve their standard of living. Also, in order for black people to have a respect for certain jobs, such as policemen, they need some black policemen. And if for no other reason than percentage-wise, 2 of them should be black, when we think in terms of the percentage of blacks living in the community at that time. So the mayor said, well, some of your relatives want the job? I said, no, I don't have any relatives that want it. And the argument, and I forgot what the exchange was, but it became so hot and heavy that the state of city attorney in the room also defending the mayor and the council against me. finally, he became so angry that he left the room completely.
Do you remember who that was?
At that time, it was a fellow by the name of Fisher. And interesting, his younger brothers were in high school with me, graduated from high school about the same time I did. But we got along, but at that time, that's all you did do, and when I was in school, get along. But anyway, later they put on two more policemen. They were white. 10 white policemen, not one black was put on.
But they had gone into the black community
to
asking
get them
to vote,
to raise their taxes, to put on
more
10 policemen. Finally, at this time, I was director of Douglas Recreation Center on Grove Street. At this time, it came out in the paper. In the meantime, the chief of police, a fellow by the name of Davis, and myself were having a running battle in the newspaper.
Was that the News Gazette or the Courier?
In the Courier.
Could you give me an approximate date for that?
This was around 1945-46.
Okay. Here. Note to the listener. It has been determined that because Mr. Taylor Lee Thomas's life experiences have been so wide and varied here in Champaign-Urbana, that subsequent tapes will be recorded. Each tape will have a specific subject for the listener's benefit. So at this time, Mr. Thomas will give us a list of, first, his work history, second, his educational background and work, third, community service, fourth, organizational affiliations, and last, religious affiliations. Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Would you please begin?
Begin with what?
Work history.
Oh. Well, my work history, you might say, is rather interesting. The fact that the first work that I recall that I ever did was what we referred to as junking. Now, that maybe doesn't make much sense to anyone today, but as a child, we were too young to hold any kind of a job other than maybe carrying papers, and my parents were kind of strict, so I couldn't get away from the house and carry papers, and our maybe as a black shining shoes, which I was not very good at. I had friends who did it, and I practiced, but I didn't have much luck. So on Saturdays especially, some of us would go junking, and junking meant that we would find rags and sell to the junk man, iron and sell to the junk man, bottles, and copper. Copper made a lot of money, and whenever they were working on the telephone lines or the electric lines, the men would always drop a little copper pieces down on the ground, and we'd go pick that up, and I guess we got maybe a half a cent a pound for that, whereas maybe for rags or paper we didn't get but a quarter of a cent a pound. But we usually would make enough money that we could go to the show on Saturday afternoon, junk all Saturday morning and go to the show on Saturday afternoon. But then my mother, I did some work in the grocery store because my mother had a very small grocery store, and I would help stock the shelves and wait on people, but I didn't get any money for that. That was just something that was expected. That was part of the home chores that one would have to do. But, and I guess you would really say my first job was a caddy. At the Urbana Golf Course. I really think it was the first or second year that the Urbana Golf Course had started. They had 18 holes my first year caddying there. I think the year before they may have had 9 holes. And I learned to caddy, and I met a number of individuals who became friends to a certain extent, friendly rivalry, because I was caddying at the Urbana Country Club. I lived in Champaign, and when I reached high school, some of the same boys who caddied with me at the Urbana Country Club were playing football for Urbana, and I was playing for Champaign. And of course, many years later, some of those same boys that went to Urbana, their children went to Urbana High, and I taught them in school, which is interesting, I thought. But after caddying, my next work experience was during the summers when I was in high school, playing football, basketball, track, whatnot. You felt that you had to develop your body, and you did that by hard work. So during the summer, you would try to find a job that would develop your muscles. Mine never did develop very much, but I did get a job working on the section hand of the Wabash Railroad. Of course, we lived close to the railroad, and I didn't have far to walk to work. But I expected to get a job as a water boy, but somehow or another I got to working on the regular section hand, and the first day when I came home, my hands were just calluses were hanging open in the middle of my hand from using the pick. But I enjoyed it. I thought I was really doing something, a man's job, and it was important. And there were some summers in which I dug ditches for the city. Would go down to the city work building and stand around all week early in the morning waiting to get hired with an extra gang. Finally did, and one of the jobs I remember we had was cleaning out the ditch that still runs around through Champaign-Urbana, digging it deeper, making it wider. Also, while I was in high school, I played the drums in a local band, where we would play for fraternity dances on the campus. And during the football season, this was fine, because we played football in Kankakee, Peoria, or where not, wherever we played, I would be picked up by the man who had the orchestra, and he would drive us back, and I wouldn't wait to come back on the bus with the other students, so that I could get back in time to play for a dance on Saturday night. Our football games were in the afternoon. But during basketball season, that became a problem because the dances were at night and the basketball games were at night. And old dumb me, I gave up playing the drums in the orchestra in order to play basketball. I wasn't that good in basketball, but I just liked to play. So I went through high school working on the jobs that I have mentioned. But I had also, my senior year in high school, had learned something about waiting table. First, I started out washing dishes. And I worked for a lady by the name of Mrs. Frankie Jordan, who was a black cateress in Champaign. And she had all of the large parties, you might say, and all of the big affairs that were held by organizations. Because at that time you did not have the restaurants as you have now and the motels and whatnot. I recall that she had the, I think it was a 4-H club for the state of Illinois had a meeting here. And I have forgotten exactly how many youth were here. As I recall, it was held at Old Huff Gym on the campus. And the floor was practically full of tables, and they had 47 waiters. And a friend of mine, we were going to wash the dishes for all of them, thinking that we could get through as fast as the waiters brought the dishes out. We ended up, we were still washing dishes at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the dinner was about 6 in the evening, and by 7 o'clock the waiters were gone. And that's when I decided I was going to be a waiter, because we were washing dishes half the night, and also all of the ladies that had worked in the kitchen had joined in to help us after they had finished preparing the meal and serving it. But I learned to wait table and work for Mrs. Jordan. I think the first time I waited table, she was having a party catered on the second floor of the Wesley Foundation on the campus. And they have a banquet hall and a stage at the end, and there were a number of banquets held there. And I recall that first time so well because I had gotten through the meal just fine. We did not have stands to put our trays on. We had large trays. We had to carry the tray in one hand and take the food off with the other. The desserts, we carried the dishes, the dinner dishes, in our arm. Maybe we carry about five or so. But I was had gotten through the meal, as I mentioned, and was passing out the dessert, and it was pumpkin pie. And I put the plate down on the table in front of the gentleman, and I looked, and there was no pie on it. It had slipped off, hit the man on the head, then on the shoulder, and then on his lap. I think it hit every part of his body possible. And here I'm standing holding a tray with still three or four pieces of pie on it, and I don't know whether to try to... I couldn't set the pie down. There wasn't room between the tables, and I wanted to brush him off. Fortunately, another waiter noticed and took and came to my assistance and took the pie from me and passed out the rest of the pie, and I took a napkin and kind of brushed him off and then went to the kitchen, and I didn't come out anymore. I thought that was going to be my last time as far as waiting tables is concerned, but I ended up not only waiting table for Mrs. Jordan, jobs that she had catering, but I waited table at the Champagne Country Club and the Urbana Country Club, and at the Inman Hotel, which is where the National Academy of Arts is, keeps house now, you might say, and also the Beardsley Hotel, which was an old hotel that my father had cooked at many years before. But that that was about the extent of my working, you might say, through high school and starting into college, because later I, after finishing a college and I came home and couldn't find work anyplace, it was a little more difficult seemingly for what we said referred to then as Negroes and as we know now as blacks to get jobs very easily. So I took a job as a houseman for the Pi Beta Phi sorority on the campus on Wright Street. I think the sorority still is located in the same place. And I worked there as a houseboy and also as a waiter for a while. And then I left that job because of really a dispute between the house mother, who hired me to work by the month, but they started paying me by the week. And after 3 months, she realized that I was getting paid more than I had been hired to be paid because they were paying me by the week, which was not my fault. And she mentioned it to me. I said, "That's right, and that's so fine. You may pay me by the month, as you stated." But when my next paycheck came, she had taken out some of the money that they had overpaid me and told me that they would do that until they got back the overpayment. Well, it wasn't that much of an overpayment. I mean, only working 3 months and being paid by the week, you can realize it, a couple of dollars here or there. So I said, "Well, you've gotten the part of it out, but you won't get any more. I will just have to find a job someplace else." So the house had a stoker, which you filled with coal in the basement. So I filled the stoker with coal so they would have heat the rest of the day, because you see it's in the wintertime now, and told them that I was leaving, and I did. But I then worked for the private family, and this was really new to me in a way. I never worked in a private family before, Mr. and Mrs. Redhead. I worked for them until I finally just told my parents I was going to have to go someplace else to get a job, because I didn't have one here that was satisfactory. Well, my parents, since I was an only child, my parents really didn't want me to leave home, but they felt that since I was going to go to Indianapolis, and I had an aunt in Indianapolis, well, maybe I would be safe there. So I did go to Indianapolis, Indiana, and went to the Farm Security Administration to obtain a job. And when I applied, they didn't have any jobs. So I did wait table a little bit in Indianapolis, not much, but a little bit. But they informed me at the Farm Security Administration to come back, and they might have something. And so I go back every day or every week for a while. It wasn't too long, I think about 2 weeks. And they said, well, now we don't have a job that you would like to work at. I was applying for a clerical job. But we do have a job that if you take it, maybe you'll be working for us. Maybe something will open up and then you can move into it easier. And I said, well, what is the job? They said, it's a night watchman. Well, I didn't know anything about being a night watchman, but I did want to work. So I said I would take it. My parents, I don't think, ever did know that I was a night watchman in Indianapolis. If they had, I think they'd gone through the ceiling. I was a night watchman for 6 months before a clerical job opened up in the daytime. And here I had to walk all over that building, five stories. The building, well, actually, was about a city block. It was quite a bit of walking. By the time you'd get around punching the clock at the various stations, it was time to start around again. You'd start at the bottom and you'd go up to the top floor punching the clock. Then you'd ride the elevator down and think you're going to be able to relax for a minute. And you'd look at your clock and it's time to go, because every hour you had to punch the clock. So it took you an hour to walk around and come back, and then you'd have to start around again. So I guess that was one way of keeping you awake during the night. But finally I got on as during clerical work and at the Farm Security Administration in Annapolis.
Go ahead.
But was an agency of the government that loaned money to farmers. And this office included a central area of about five states. I believe Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Missouri, and I'm not sure what the other state was, possibly Ohio. But they would loan money to farmers who could not get the kind of loan that would be long enough. You could get 20-year loan from the government or 10-year loan, whereas maybe the banks, they could only get 3-year. And if they had a bad crop or the rains, they were in trouble as far as money was concerned. And I worked with Farm Security on about two or three different jobs. First, I started out as a messenger in the daytime. Night watchman, then messenger in the daytime, which was carrying mail all over the building. And I was used to walking from being a night watchman. And then a clerical job, and then a sorting job, and was head of sorting, which were all three of us. And then finally a file clerk working with the folders of the various farmers that had obtained money from the government. I mentioned on the previous take that I had worked the Farm Security Administration from 37 to 40, and my next work experience was at Chanute Field in 1944, so you immediately wonder what happened from 40 to 1940 to 1944. During that period, I was in bed ill from as a result of tuberculosis. During that time, people had to go to bed and rest over a number of years so that your lung could heal, whereas today they give you pills and it doesn't take as long for one to get well. But I was in bed 2 years in the sanitarium and 2 years at home, and I took pneumothorax for over 12 years. Pneumothorax is when a needle is put in your side and your lung is collapsed so that it can rest and heal. After my illness, then I started working at Chanute Field Unit Personnel Office and worked during clerical work there for 1 year. Actually, the time that I went to Chanute Field, there were blacks working as teachers on the field, and there were blacks in custodial work, but there were no blacks doing clerical work. And so really This was the first time that blacks had clerical jobs, unless they were military personnel. If they were military personnel, but as far as civilians were concerned, there weren't any. And then later, more were hired, and there still are a number working at Chanute. After leaving Chanute in 45, I became director of Douglas Recreation Center in Champaign, where I worked very actively, I might say, with recreation in the city of Champaign during the summer in the park and during the winter in the center, perhaps in the center in the summer also, as well as the park program that went along with the Douglas Center Park. When Douglas Center was opened, previous to that, there had been a USO at a Lawhead School, and this USO was supervised by Mrs. Irma Bridgewater, and when the center was open, actually a week or so before I started working there, the USO moved down to the center, and Mrs. Bridgewater supervised that program. After I became director, I had charge of the center and all of the programs that were in the center from then on. After working from 1945 until 1948 at Douglas Center, I took a job as an eighth grade teacher and coach at Jackson School in Danville, Illinois. And I taught in Danville from 1948 until 1956, when I was hired as a teacher in the Urbana School District 116. And I taught for 12 years in the Urbana School District, and until 1968, when I became assistant principal of the high school. And then from 1968 to 1972, I was assistant principal in the high school. And from 72 to 77, I was assistant superintendent in charge of pupil services for the Urbana School District. And in 77, I reached the magic age when it was necessary for me to retire, not because of anything other than age. As for my education, I attended first Columbia School from the first to the third grade. Columbia School was located on corner of the southwest corner of Bradley and Neal Street in Champaign. It so happens that this year the school has been closed. The building is still there. And then from the fourth to the seventh grade, I attended Gregory School, which is located on the northwest corner of Randolph and Columbia in Champaign. The building is still standing, but the school has been closed for a number of years. And then in the eighth grade, I attended Central School, which years before, I understand, was the high school. It is was located on the corner of Southwest Randolph and Hill Street. That building is no longer in existence. The cornerstone is still there on the left on the corner, however, though. And then I attended Champaign High School, which was located on the northwest corner of Green and State. After graduating from high school, I eventually attended school at Tennessee State College in Nashville, Tennessee. And then when I was working in Indianapolis, Indiana, I attended Indiana Extension University. Graduating from Tennessee State College, I majored in history and minored in PE. At Indiana Extension University in Annapolis, Indiana, I took courses in sociology. Later, when I was teaching in Danville, I also took extension courses from Illinois State Extension University out of Bloomington or Normal, and also from Indiana Extension University, or State College really, out of Terre Haute, Indiana. And then I finally obtained a master's degree from the University of Illinois, Urbana, Illinois, in 1951. And then in 1955, I obtained an advanced certificate from the University of Illinois. But my education, I believe, included more than the classroom lectures and tests and what have you. I gained a great deal from conferences and workshops that I attended as a result of my employment, and considerable knowledge has been absorbed from those people with whom I have worked, those people with whom I have served on boards and on many committees, or from association with many of my friends. I have gained a great deal of knowledge. You see, I believe that everyone we meet is in some way our superior, and in that way, we can learn from her or him, whatever the case might be. I actually completed my formal education when I obtained my master's degree in education and my advanced certificate in educational administration from the University of Illinois.